Once again, it's time for another lecture at Introduction to Corporate Communication. It's our third time in this course. And today I'm going to talk about with you on the corporate communication in a changing media environment. And I'm also going to talk about certain topics around strategic planning and communication strategy. However, before going into those topics, I want to remind you an email or an invitation in particular. I think those of you who have enrolled to the Finnish version of this course, you have an invitation in your email to participate in this interesting research concerning artificial intelligence. And actually, this research is conducted by one of our doctoral researchers, Jukka Niittymaa. So I'm kind of here helping Jukka to get participants in his research. So if you have any interest in AI, or if you even haven't used AI, it's completely fine to participate in this study. But you will find more information if you have enrolled to our Finnish version of this course, 1150, so you have an invitation through our mailing list of this course on your email. So please check that out. And if you're interested, send an email to Jukka. But you will find more information and more instructions on the email you have received. Okay, I think we can move on towards today's agenda. So I will first discuss a little bit about the changing media environment and the new media landscape that organizations have to deal with nowadays, and especially with their corporate communication. How this new media landscape, these different media types in an online setting, how they kind of affect to the whole profession nowadays. So I'm going to first off talk a little bit about differences between traditional and new media environments. And what does it mean when we talk about traditional, and what does it mean when we talk about new media environment. I'm also going to give you a short overview of the different media types in an online setting. So basically, when we talk about the new media environment, it usually means more or less the online setting that these environments are. There is also this quite interesting Facebook 10-year roadmap from 2016. So you might ask that why on earth I'm going to show you something from now 8 years back. But it's actually quite fun to see that how well Facebook actually predicted where we are right now and how, for example, artificial intelligence is coming into play, especially in the online setting of these new media environments. I'm also going to give you a little group task that we're going to conduct at Flinga environment. So I'm going to show you a QR code. You can use your mobile, take a picture from that code, and then you can type in your answers to the Flinga environment. But I'll give you the instructions once we get there. There's also a short case example at the end of this first half of the lecture. Let's see if we have time to go through that. I also want to talk with you about the communication strategy, so it might be so that we skip the case example and you can read it through by yourself after lecture, if you wish. So, to start off, basically, when we talk about corporate communication nowadays, it's pretty obvious that social media is a big part of communication and something that basically every major or minor organization has to take into consideration in their communication. So basically this new media society that we are now talking about, it provides different kind of opportunities, but also challenges for organizations. It relates to the communication, and I was talking about the engagement and how important it is for organizations nowadays. So obviously this new media environment, new media society, it it offers these different kind of opportunities and challenges for organizations with their stakeholders. And basically, the opportunities usually rise when the organizations can create new ways of reaching out and engaging with their stakeholders. And there's a lot of this interplay with publics, stories and different kind of messages and different kind of content created all the time by the organizations, but also by the stakeholders that they are interacting with. And the challenges usually emerge because the communication practitioners, they sometimes can take the view that the new media landscape kind of blurs the boundaries between content providers and consumers, and it also makes this news gathering and dissemination increasingly fragmented. And what this actually means is that it's not always so easy to kind of differentiate the organization, the stakeholders, and different messages, different kind of content from each other. So it's not always so easy for example, social media users to actually know that what is true and what is the truth, and what kind of content is actually created by an organization and what kind of content is created by, let's say, its customers. So do the constant interaction and engagement and a lot of messages, a lot of content that is created in social media, it creates this kind of a blurring situation for the organizations. And it's not always easy to find a proper way to differentiate the different actors in social media. And I would also argue that artificial intelligence will make it even more difficult to at least differentiate different kind of content, whether this is artificially generated or is this actually content created by some human being, for example. So this will also add another layer to the, challenges that emerge in these environments. So I showed you this picture already. I think it was on last lecture. So this is basically where we are at the moment when we approach corporate communication. So just a reminder for you that stakeholder engagement, it has become more and more important. It's important in social media, but it's important also in general when we talk about corporate communication. And another thing to keep in mind is obviously that communication is nowadays the central aspect of the strategy of the organization. And I'm going to talk about the strategy on the second half of this lecture. But this strategic approach is also involved in this approach when we think about organizations dealing with new media environments as well. And just to remind you of the different themes that are included in this stakeholder engagement approach, especially in online environments. So advocacy and stakeholder advocacy are important, transparency, authenticity, and interactivity. All these four things are something that kind of formulates the stakeholder engagement, but are also part of the communication in an online setting and in these new media environments. Okay, so when we think about traditional and new media environments, it is obviously important to understand that social media and different kind of online technologies, they obviously offer this more interactive, more free-flowing conversations between corporate communication practitioners of organizations and different kind of stakeholders. It could be external stakeholders, especially when we talk about, let's say, communication in social media environment. But of course, internal stakeholders are as important, and these different kind of technologies, if we think about, for example, our organization here at the university, we employees, we interact with each other by using different kind of technologies, including, for example, Teams, well, of course, a lot of emails back and forth. And I would also say that you guys, students, are one of our internal stakeholders. We interact with you during the courses in different kind of environments, including Moodle. We have an exam space in this course available as well. So, I mean, these new media environments, they have changed a lot of things inside and outside organizations. And maybe one of the differences between traditional and new media is that usually traditional media has focused more on this one-way messaging techniques through which organizations speak to an audience. So this involves such outlets as newspapers, radio, television. You didn't have a lot, if any, two-way messaging available on those traditional media platforms back in the day. But when we approach this new media environment, it is characterized as a form of crowdcasting, or joukkoistaminen in Finnish. Again, I don't know if this is the perfect translation in Finnish, but you probably understand the idea throughout the context. So when we talk about crowdcasting, it enables stakeholders of an organization to kind of self-organize as a crowd in order to produce and disseminate content about an organization. So I think this is one of the key differences between traditional media and new media settings, when there was basically no room for interaction, no room for two-way communication in traditional media environments. But nowadays, when the communication occurs in these new media environments, it offers a lot more possibilities for stakeholders to crowd themselves and actually produce content that is related to the organization in a way or another. And also it means that the stakeholders, they are no longer passive audiences, but active participants in the communication about an organization. And this is one of the key changes in the mindsets of organization and how corporate communication professionals should also approach their communication when they're actually doing it in these new media environments. You will find this picture from the Cornelissen book, once again, so I have taken a screenshot of it, and it actually explains quite well through the communication approach, communication model. It also explained the underlying principles, key metaphors, rules of communication, and also the costs of content production and publishing threshold between traditional media and new media environments. And once again, like I said in the last slide, so the traditional media has focused more on this broadcasting approach, meaning that the stakeholders are seen as audiences and they receive messages from the organization in a controlled and planned manner. But
when we are in a new media environment, this broadcasting approach is more likely to happen, which means that the stakeholders are seen as participants who produce or forward content about the organization. So they are not just receiving it, they are also producing some kind of content related to it. Or at least they have a possibility to do so if they will. The communication model is also different. So traditionally, it's been one-to-many. So for example, organization, publishing an advertisement in a newspaper that is seen by many newspaper readers, but there is no additional interaction between the organization and stakeholders or the receivers of the advertisement happening. But now in the new media environment, if there is certain kind of, let's say, advertisement, it might be so that the stakeholders, they give some kind of feedback related to it, they share it with their peers, and they might talk positively or negatively about the organization based on the advertisement or based on the previous experiences they have had with the organization. And you can see that the communication model then changes from many to one or even many to many, meaning that it could be so that there are many stakeholders, such as customers or consumers, discussing about the organization, and there are many people seeing the discussions that are going publicly, let's say in some social media platform, for example. So this is the basic principles in terms of the communication model. And in terms of principles, you can also see, and I think I mentioned it in the previous slides as well, that the positioning has been one of the key things in the past and one of the underlying principles. But nowadays, it is more focused on the content generation. So in the traditional media environment, when there was possibility to do plan and actually control the transfer of the corporate messages and campaigns, including the advertisements and stuff, nowadays, the organizations has to also take into consideration this kind of a free generation and dissemination of corporate content without them actually having any control over how it is actually shared between the stakeholders, let's say in the social media platforms. So this is also one of the key changes between traditional media environment and new media environment nowadays. And again, from communication perspective and from the perspective of corporate communication professionals, it is also important to understand how we nowadays talk with these key metaphors. So in the past, when the traditional media environment was the only place to kind of reach stakeholders and potential customers and consumers effectively, we talked about mediums and channels. But nowadays, we also refer to platforms and arenas. And Vilma was talking with you on the very first lecture about the issue arenas, and that's one of the examples how we kind of approach these different arenas or different platforms where we interact between organization and stakeholders. So it's important to understand that even though mediums and channels, they still are alive today, we also have this new approach through platforms and arenas when we kind of use our own language in the corporate communication field. Also, the rules of communication, they have changed a bit, and there is a connection between this corporate positioning in traditional media environment and this kind of a fixed and controlled rules. Because, like I said, there is a lot more free generation and dissemination of corporate content nowadays in new media environment And it means that it kind of creates this more messy and emergent approach to the rules of communication, making, again, things a little bit, or even if not a little bit, it could be even a lot more challenging for the corporate communication professionals as well. So it really takes a skill to be able to interact in these new media environments in a way that you can do it effectively and be also reliable and maybe even authentic in the environment nowadays. There's also this cost of content production and publishing threshold. So it could be so that nowadays, yes, it's more cheaper and the cost of producing content, for example, in social media could be lowered compared to traditional media environment where you have to pay a lot of money so that you can advertise there or get, let's say, visibility for your organization or company. But at the same time, even though it might be cheaper, it's not cheap to gain visibility in these new media environments because there is so much content available created by different companies, created by stakeholders. So it takes a lot of effort to be able to seen and to be in a position where the stakeholders and potential customers and consumers actually sees your message and are interested about your content that you create. So this is the kind of a downside of new media environment, even though producing normal content there is relatively cheap or it doesn't cost anything. But again, if you want to gain visibility in these new media environments, you have to be able to, or you have to be ready to pay for that as well. So it's not going to be completely free to do that for the organizations nowadays. Yeah, and also one thing to keep in mind that even though you see the traditional media environment, the new media environment here as an opposite, on opposite sides, the traditional media environments, they are still available nowadays, so they haven't vanished anywhere. But, just to keep in mind that they also kind of change and mix into these new media environments as well. And then when we chop these new media environments in smaller pieces, you can see that there are different kind of media types in an online setting. Cornelissen is actually providing three different media types in his book. I'm going to add a couple more types on the next slide, but we can go through first these three types provided by Cornelissen. So when an organization is actually creating content in this new media environment, let's say it's in some kind of advertisement or some content that it creates on its own web page, or basically any content that is somehow related to organization, you can see kind of the differences here, how they then interact with each other. So if we are talking about the owned media, it usually is defined as this kind of an online media that an organization owns and controls. And you can see the examples here, different websites they have, branded content they create, if they produce any content in blogs or video blogs, if they have a Facebook page, not anymore, probably Twitter accounts, I would think we talk about X accounts, YouTube channels. Obviously, it doesn't list all the possible social media platforms here, Instagram, Threads, and so forth. But basically, when the organization owns the specific website it has, or it has a specific social media page for itself. It tries to generate interest in the organization and its products or services, directly or indirectly, through these owned and controlled media arenas. And this role for this kind of an owned media online setting is to engage stakeholders and build relationships with them. And there are certain benefits in this approach. Like I told you, in these new media environments, there is less control nowadays available, but these owned media channels or arenas, they actually offer a lot more control. They're also cost efficient to some extent, and they also offer a lot of ways to engage with stakeholders. But on the downside, there is no guarantee of engagement, even though they offer this kind of ways of engaging with the stakeholders. So it might be so that the stakeholders, they don't visit your website, they don't want to interact with you on your social media platform and so forth. There is also this kind of a potential skepticism towards organization when the stakeholders are seeing the content created by an organization and posting it on its own, let's say, Facebook page or Instagram page or whatever platform it is. And this is actually something that usually differentiates between earned media and owned media quite a lot, especially in situations when this kind of stakeholder-generated online word of mouth about the organization kind of starts to go forward and in fact becomes the medium for the message. So this is actually seen as the most credible and authentic media type in an online setting if the organization is able to earn this kind of a media visibility there and is able to generate traffic to owned media through this earned media approach here. So, and one of the benefits also with earned media is that it may live on stakeholders. When the stakeholders actually become the true advocates of an organization, you know, it might live on a lot longer than, let's say, one kind of a content created to the owned media page of an organization. And the downside here, however, is that even though the organization might want to earn this kind of a media visibility for itself, it might be so that it's not always positive. So in those situations, it might be so that this kind of a negative engagement actually live on a lot longer than the organization would like to, and it could create some problems for the organization in the long run as well. But if the things go to the positive direction, earned media is a very effective way for the organization to generate positive engagement towards itself. The paid media type falls in between of these two. So once again, there is still some control in organization when we talk about this paid media approach. However, if it's seen as this kind of a direct advertising, you know, it's not always a good thing. However, I think most of us are seeing advertisements every day, and we don't, you know, think about it that much. But there is some downsides if it's seen as direct advertisement. The good thing about paid media is that you can actually, you know, invest money as an organization and gain visibility by that approach. But like I said, it's going to cost some money. And even though you have control, you can create some immediacy and gain visibility. There is still all of these downsides, you know, in terms of credibility and stuff like that. And it doesn't kind of you know, compare to the earned media approach in that extent, especially in situations when it's seen as straightforward advertising. Yeah, but I think Cornelissen quite well put it here. What are the differences between owned paid and earned media in an online setting? But I would say that this is not the whole story, because you can also approach, you know, this media landscape of corporations or organizations by adding five more approaches here. I think the text is, or the font size is quite small, but I can also see that there is some Finnish and English actually mixed up a bit. Anyhow, Vilma and Elisa Juholin, they actually made a study or a research article back in 2017 in one of our Finnish corporate communication or public relations or communication professional outlets, Prokoma Akademik, about mitattava viestintä, so it translates to measurable communication. I think that's the direct translation for that. But basically, they added five more media landscapes which are shared, searched, hijacked, mined, and rented. And if we start with the shared media approach, it is actually content in social networks and services that are freely distributed and shared by the users related to the organization or brand, services or products, uncontrolled by the organization. So this is pretty close to the earned media approach, but it still has some minor differences compared to that. And it focuses on this content in social networks, such as social media posts. Then the search media. It is content that is found through search engines and applications related to organizations, which can be influenced partly such as via SEO, which means search engine optimization. So usually search media, it translates to search results. So it could be so that search engines gain visibility for certain organizations, and it might be so that some organizations get more visibility through the search engines than some others. It could be so that you have paid advertising in certain search engine and you get your search engine results up higher than others, but it could be also so that you haven't paid anything, and even on those situations your organization can be found a bit easier through the search engine compared to some other company, for example. Then they also have this hijacked media approach. So this is more on the negative side of things when looking at from the perspective of organization. So it's usually using the media attention created by others to advance own agendas, such as hashtags, not controlled by the organization. So it could be so that some customer is not happy with the product or service she or he is using in certain organization. And this customer creates a post in social media with some kind of negative hashtags that actually connects the specific organization and this post that the customer is publishing in social media. And this is one of the ways to kind of hijack the conversation related to the specific organization and get it to the wrong direction by using these hashtags. Mind media is also one of the approaches. So it usually means the data available in different platforms and formats related to organization, such as statistics and user data. So it might be so that there is some reports publicly available that somehow shows some information concerning the organization. And it could be so that this data is publicly available, but you know, it could be a big data set and it's not always easy to find. But once you have this kind of a mind media approach to it, you can find, you know, different kind of statistical data related to an organization, and it offers some kind of, let's say, positive or negative information about it. It might be so that this kind of information could be utilized by certain stakeholders as well. But usually this mind media refers to data available publicly, not always easy to find, but could be found by using certain tools, whether it's search engines or even artificial intelligence tools nowadays. And the last additional media measurement landscape of corporations is rented media. So it means that using the earned publics or influencers to promote products and brands partially controlled by the organization. And I think Vilma and Elisa, they have listed here the influencers. And if you think about nowadays, it's actually quite common for many, many companies to utilize the influencers here in Finland, but also you know, globally outside Finland as well. And if there's an influencer with a lot of followers, it's easy to create a lot of visibility for the organization by utilizing them in a way or another. It could be so that it's actually some kind of paid collaboration with the influencer, but it could be also work in a way that there is no collaboration between the organization and the influencer, and it might be so that the influencer is you know, praising the organization, its products and services, or telling that, hey, never use this company X or this company Y for this specific service or for these specific products. So it works both ways when we approach this rented media approach here, or, you know, utilizing influencers in the communication. Okay, but these are kind of the approaches in terms of the new media environments, especially online media, and how it could be approached to this kind of a media measurement approach or landscape of corporations. And a couple more words about the challenges of these new media environments, especially from the perspective of corporate communication professionals. So I think I already told you that because there is an ever-changing and content-rich media field in these new media environments, you know, the organization, they have to be able to find a way to stand out, to gain visibility in a way or another, so that they can survive. And of course, they need to do it in an authentic and in a truthful and transparent way. And I would say also that from the perspective of corporate communication, you know, sharing knowledge or sharing information alone is no longer enough to be able to attract people's attention or maintain relationships. So there has to be some additional layers to it to be able to do that. Okay, a good story or interesting content could be one of the differentiating factors. And it means that content creation and what kind of content in which platforms, in which ways we actually create it must be taken into account as part of the strategic planning of communication. And I'm going to talk about this more in the second half of this lecture, when we approach the strategic planning of communication. But this is kind of a way to also deal with these new media environments and find the way for the organization to succeed there, is to approach all of this from the strategic perspective.
Yeah, maybe to summarize again, this new media approach is that the corporate communication professionals, they have to find ways for the organization to become credible, be able to hurt there, and also be able to reach out and engage with its key stakeholders. So in Finnish, uskottavuus, erottautuminen ja tavoittavuus kautta osallistaminen, those are the key things taken into consideration when approaching the new media environments. And yeah, you know, the communication strategy, it plays a key role in achieving all of these goals. And I'm going to talk about it a bit more, like I said, on the second half. Yeah, like I said in the very beginning of this lecture, I wanted to show you this Facebook, or nowadays, I think the company controlling Facebook or owning it is called Meta. But back in 2016, they were still known as Facebook. And they actually, they gave us this kind of a roadmap they had back in the day. And Mark Zuckerberg was actually giving a keynote speech at Facebook F8 seminar. And it's actually quite funny to see that where we are right now. So if you think about, we are now in the year 8, I would say, in this roadmap. And already in 2016, we were able to see that they predicted that, you know, virtual reality and augmented reality, they are the technologies that are with us nowadays. They also gave some predictions in terms of connectivity. But most importantly, they predicted how artificial intelligence is also gonna play out nowadays. And if you look at a bit closely, you can see in terms of connectivity, you can see words such as drones, satellites, lasers, terrestrial solutions, telecommunications, infra, and free basics. I don't actually know what free basics means, but basically all of these have also come into play. They also see that AI can help us on vision, language, reasoning, and planning, and I think all of these are already available for us now in year 8 on this roadmap. And I think virtual reality, you know, different kind of applications related to that and to augmented reality as well has been with us for quite some time already. So I think the predictions they made in terms of the ecosystems, the products they have, and also the technologies they are able to utilize, and we all are actually able to utilize nowadays, they have all been pretty well predicted. So this is kind of a nice way to look at how well they were able to see in the future, at least to some extent. And all of this has also changed how organizations approach their corporate communication activities as well, because they have to take into consideration all the different ecosystems they can use, all the products that are available, and all the technologies that actually support them and are helping them in their work. So again, from the perspective of communication, a very interesting roadmap and something to look into. It would be actually nice to see that what would they predict today, or let's say if they have another 10-year roadmap coming in 2026, that what are the predictions on that specific date. So before we head into a small break, I have this task for you guys now to do. So you can form groups of 4 or 5, or you can do this individually if you will. It doesn't necessarily matter, but if you're in groups, we don't get so many answers, and it's a little bit easier for me to read as well in the Flinga platform. But you can take your mobiles out, and you can scan the QR code here. And I actually have two questions for you to answer. Discuss first and then answer in the Flinga platform. So with the rise of this kind of video content and live streaming, how can companies or different kind of organizations leverage these mediums for corporate communication purposes? And another question is related to the artificial intelligence, and it's kind of related to the first question as well. So what opportunities and threats AI tools provide for corporate communication professionals in this area? So again, there is no wrong or right answers to these questions, but this is something that I would like you to see to discuss first. Then scan the code and add your answers to the Flinga page, and we can then look at them after the break. So let's do this in a way that I'll give you 5 minutes to discuss. So until 5 past 3. After that, scan that, apply your answers, and we can then have a break and continue at 3:15. And then we are going to go through the answers you have. So again, 5 minutes for discussion, apply your answers, and then you can head for the break, and we continue at 3:15. Okay, I think we can go through your answers to this Flinga page. I think there are still some answers maybe coming, or your thoughts. It's totally fine. We can actually see them live here. And okay, most of them we are able to read. There are a couple that they include so much text that I need to zoom in those, but I'll probably do it later. First of all, thank you for your answers. I mean, you have been able to discuss about both questions in very, I would say, a professional way, and take a lot of different points of view into consideration here, which is a great thing. If we first go through the video content and live streaming opportunities, how the companies can leverage these. And I think you have done a good job on how the organizations can nowadays, especially in the new media environments, utilize these opportunities. And I think if any of you use social media more or less, I think every one of us has been seeing the development nowadays that there is more and more, you know, video content available for us. You know, live streaming has become a thing. And this also means that it's not just the media houses or the certain organizations that could create live streaming and have big audiences, but it could be basically any one of us. If we have interesting content, you know, if you're an interesting personality, let's say you are influencer in a more you know, smaller or in a bigger scale, I mean, you are still able to attract audiences. So I think this is kind of a game changer as well nowadays, that what are the possibilities to live stream and create this kind of engaging video content with different kind of audiences. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things to begin with, and obviously we don't have a time to go through all of these. I think the main thing here is that you have completely understand what this is all about and how many different opportunities but also challenges there are on this video content side. And when we apply artificial intelligence to the play, I mean, it also changes the game quite a lot. And yeah, there is a lot of different opportunities. Of course, increased efficiency when we talk about corporate communication professionals and artificial intelligence, and not just corporate communication, but any professional doing any kind of work where you need to create content, where you have to kind of
think about different ideas. Even if you have to create a strategy, which I'm going to talk about in just a little bit, I think artificial intelligence will give you different opportunities and support you in that work as well. Yeah, again, this making things faster, more effective. And maybe do things in a smaller time frame, so being more efficient in the tasks. But then the threats. Obviously, I think what kind of I was trying to kind of connect all of these. So this false information, deepfake, fake content, information content, and then also the threat of sending false information and misinformation. These are all the threats that are already present when using artificial intelligence. And I think it has become, and it will become even more difficult to kind of, when we move forward, to be able to detect if some video content is actually fake or if it's generated by a human being. And this also generates a threat for, let's say, individuals, but also for different kind of organizations as well, because you can't detect nowadays if there's some kind of a deepfake content available and if the things that happens in that video, if they actually have happened or if it's just AI generated. So this is definitely something to take into consideration. And obviously it creates uncertainty for individuals and also organizations. A lot of things here. I will add link to this Flinger page to Moodle. And you can actually find it on these slides as well if you click that link under the QR code. You should be able to get access to this page and see what all of you have been written down. And you can also zoom in and look at this text box with more content in it. I quickly read it through, and there's a lot of things mentioned, very, very valuable and applicable to this task as well. Yeah, I mean, this is something you can think of, and I would also say that when you prepare yourselves for the exam, even though there's not going to be questions from this Flinger page, this is something that will affect to the profession of corporate communication professionals nowadays and also in the future. So from that perspective, this is very beneficial for you. And obviously it's created by you guys, so this is very nice to see. Okay, I think we can move on from this task. I'm going to open up another presentation for you, and let's talk a little bit more about the communication strategy and strategic planning. And even though I'm not going to talk about AI in these slides, this picture is generated by AI, and I think, like I said, the strategic planning will also be affected by the development of artificial intelligence. And I think it's already in place in some organizations, at least to some level. But it will also affect on how different organizations, how they approach planning, how they approach their strategies, and if they can make it more effective, I think they can also use the help of AI on that, at least to some extent, depending on the organization. So, but I'm going to talk about the process of developing a corporate communication strategy here and what are usually the basic content of a communication strategy on a basic level and how, you can plan communication programs and campaigns and what are actually the differences between program and campaign. And usually when you start to develop a communication strategy, the main or the basic idea is that it brings the reputation in line with the vision of the organization. So the organization has usually a certain reputation in the minds of stakeholders, and what the organization is usually trying to accomplish with a communication strategy is to keep that good reputation as it is, and if there is need to make some changes to it in the minds of stakeholders, then the strategy tries to kind of tackle that and make those changes visible so that the image and reputation is actually in line with how the organization wants itself to be seen by the stakeholders. So this is usually the main starting point when starting to develop a communication strategy. And it usually consists this kind of a combination of planned and emergent processes. And when we talk about strategy, it's even though there are some bits and pieces showing some specific plans or tactics, it usually gives a little bit bigger or broader picture of how to actually conduct the communication in the organization, and especially with the external stakeholders, if we are talking about, let's say, some kind of a content strategy, for example. And the strategy in this specific context, it usually is about the organization and its environment. So when you're planning a strategy, you have to take into consideration the environment you are actually acting with the organization. And environment, it doesn't necessarily mean the nature and stuff like that, but the different kind of stakeholders that you are surrounded with, the different arenas, media outlets, all the places you interact and engage with your stakeholders, including customers and consumers. That is actually something that generates the environment. And additional layer to that is obviously, the country you are located at. And if you're acting globally, you have to take into consideration these multiple different kind of laws and regulations within that country as well. So all of these are affecting to the environment you are involved in. And when we kind of combine the corporate strategy, the overall strategy, and the communication strategy, it's important to notice that they speak with each other. So usually the corporate strategy is translating to communication strategy, and through that we are informing the corporate strategy. So they go around in this kind of way. And this is good to keep in mind, so that the communication strategy is an integral part or important part of the corporate strategy. And, it informs, but it also translates through the overall strategy into it. So this is kind of a way it works. And you will find more specific explanation to this, again, from the Cornelissen book. I just wanted to show you this picture that you can get kind of the general viewpoint on this, and you will find more specific details on your textbook. And usually the content of a communication strategy specifically is this kind of an organization-wide assessment of how organization is seen by stakeholders in light of the organization's vision. So it basically means that we take a look how the stakeholders are seeing now our organization at this specific time and moment? And where would we like to be in the future? So what is our vision? Where would we like to be in terms of reputation? Do we want to keep it as it is? Or is there any need to change this perspective and how our reputation is seen by our stakeholders? And this kind of forms the basis, this reputation vision gap for the formulation of the strategic intent of an organization. And how the strategic intent is defined here is, like I said, the change or consolidation in a company's reputation that is intended. I listed this further reading, so there's an obviously, there are a lot of case examples in the course book, but Walmart example is quite good one. You can find it from the page 121 in the 2023 edition of the book. So it's this one that is available also as an e-book online. Now, I can't remember if that specific example is available on any of the previous editions of the book, but at least you can find it from the ebook version available at our library webpage. And maybe before going to the step-by-step guide on how to actually conduct a communication strategy, it is important to differentiate a couple of things here. So communication program from a communication campaign. So at times it could be that you create a strategy for this longer period of time that doesn't necessarily has any preset endpoint to it. And then in those cases, we talk about communication programs. And if there is more, let's say, more specific or more restricted time for a specific campaign, then communication campaign is actually the word we are going to use. So this is important for you to kind of differentiate from each other. So it might be so that we formulate a set of activities for a longer period of time, and you know, the time is not so restricted, and you know, we don't give so much specific compared to these communication campaigns that are usually you know, put into place in a shorter period of time with specific beginning and end deadlines for it. So this is good to keep in mind as well. And this is one of the basic ways to approach communication planning. Of course, when we talk about strategic planning and different kind of strategies, there are many different kind of options how you can actually do it and how you can plan different kind of communication programs and different kind of campaigns. It depends on your organization, and you know, there are many things that affect the process, but this is kind of a basic overview to begin with, and I would say that majority of organizations, when they're planning their communication, you know, campaigns, their communication programs, this is a good way to start. You usually start with the vision you have, where you want to be in the future, whether it's in 1, 2, 5, 10 years, whatever it is. And you also look at the reputation, your current reputation, where you are in terms of that at this point. Then you define, based on that, your strategic intent. You start to define your objectives in terms of communication. You want to identify and prioritize your target audiences. You want to identify the themed messages you have. What kind of message styles you're going to use. And you also take into consideration the different media arenas. If you have a more traditional approach, or if you're going to utilize these new media environments I was talking about in the first half of the lecture, stuff like that when you develop a media strategy. And of course, you have to prepare the budget, because basically the budget will define that how well you are able to actually be able to reach out all of these first six steps of this strategic communication plan you have. And I'm going to tell you now more in the detail each of these seven steps, what they consist of. So when we start off with the strategic intent, like I said, it starts from the vision and reputation approach and vision and reputation gap. So if there is need for change, or if we want to kind of consolidate, keep things as they are in terms of how the stakeholder reputation of the organization is at this specific moment. Do we want to change that or not? And again, it's based upon the gap between how the organization wants to be seen by important stakeholder groups and how it is currently seen by each of those groups. The next step after that, when you kind of know that where you want to go, if you want to keep things as they are or if you want to start to change them, you have to kind of define the objectives on how to reach that goal. And one way to do it is to follow this SMART approach. So it comes from the specific, measurable, actionable, realistic, and timely. So obviously you have to appeal to stakeholders with this kind of a particular message so that they react, you know, to your favor, and either they change or keep the things as they are in terms of the specific supportive behavior towards the organization. And like I said, it should be very tightly defined as possible based on, for example, this SMART approach. So you have to be specific with your goals, whether it's you want to create more information towards your organization, or if there are certain things that you want to come out with and maybe the publics or the stakeholders don't know yet. So you have to be specific with that. You also have to be able to measure any changes in terms of the publicity, or if there's any changes in, let's say, customer behavior based on your strategy. So let's say you create a communication campaign and you want to create more traffic to your web page so that customers will buy more of your products or services. And this is one of the ways to kind of measure it, that when we start the campaign, this is how much traffic we got to our web page, and this is how many products we were able to sell. And after the campaign, we can look at that if there's any changes in terms of that if the customers actually have bought more products since we launched our communication campaign. This is one of the ways to measure things. It should also be, okay, you can see actionable, but also achievable. So these should be achievable in a way that they kind of take into consideration the current situation of the organization, how it is seen by the stakeholders, and what is the kind of surrounding environment, and actionable in a way that they are actually able to launch the campaign and actually do the things that they want to do in this specific campaign in terms of communication. So it kind of combines those two A's here. It also have to be realistic. So, you have to take into consideration how much budget you have available, what are your resources, do you need to use any external experts? Are you going to utilize, let's say, certain kind of influencers if you have some kind of a social media campaign going on? All of these things have to take into consideration, and you have to think about that, how much money and resources you have available. So is it realistic to actually apply this kind of a campaign? And it's also important that it's timely, and especially when we talk about campaigns compared to these more broad communication programs, you know, being timely is important. So you have to have a certain end point if we're talking about campaigns, so that you can actually follow how well the strategy itself have succeeded, and how easily it is actually to measure the campaign within this time frame. So this is also important to keep in mind. Again, one basic way to kind of start planning and defining the objectives is through this SMART approach. And if you're able to kind of tackle all of these five SMART parts of the plan, you're going to go into the right direction for sure when defining your objectives. Then you need to also identify and prioritize your target audiences. And well, obviously one way to do it is use the stakeholder salience model and power interest matrix. Those can actually be found on chapter 4 on the Cornelissen book. I hope that the chapter number is right here, but anyhow, I will show you the these models on next slides. And the idea by utilizing these models and when you're trying to identify and prioritize your target audiences is to segment those groups into more specific target audiences. So when you have a big group of stakeholders, you have to kind of target them into a more specific audiences and prioritize them based on what kind of a program or what kind of a campaign you have, going on. And one way to kind of approach the different stakeholders and, put them into a more specific groups is through this stakeholder salience model. And this model actually shows you these three kind of approaches: power, legitimacy, and urgency. So it usually tells you that how much power the stakeholder has, how legitimate the claims are that the stakeholder makes, and what is the urgency in terms of should we take this stakeholder into consideration by our organization. And then you can see that there are different names for these different groups, and it might be so that some stakeholders, they have more power and urgency, and then they are considered as dangerous stakeholders. Then if they have these more legitimate claims and they have power, they are called dominant stakeholders. And if they have a legitimate claims and some urgency towards organization, they are more dependent stakeholders. And if all of these three are combined, we can call them definitive stakeholders. And there is also this group of non-stakeholders that, they don't fall into any of these specific categories. But this is one way to kind of approach these different stakeholders you have. And it might be so that if your organization is able to recognize that, okay, our strategy is more, geared towards certain group of these stakeholders, we need to take that into consideration in our strategy as well. Once again, you will find more specific definitions of each of these groups in the course book, but this is one of the ways, once again, to that you can apply when planning the specific target audiences you have and how to kind of prioritize them as well. One way to look at the stakeholders as well is through this power interest matrix. So it might be so that certain stakeholder groups, they will need more of your attention than the others. And Cornelissen offers this kind of a four different groups of stakeholders based on the power interest matrix. So certain stakeholder groups, they need minimal effort. Some of them should be more focused on that your organization keeps them informed. Some of the groups need to be kept satisfied, and some of the groups are more of these key players that they kind of combine this power and interest towards your organization. So once again, this is one of the good ways to group and organize your stakeholders, and then, you know, based on how many key players you have, if there are certain groups that needs to keep satisfied and some of them need to kept informed, and if there are certain groups that needs minimal effort, once again, you can kind of target your strategy based on this power interest matrix as well. Outside the target audiences, you also have to take into consideration that how are you gonna, you know, actually, what kind of messages and what kind of content you wanna create, and you need to identify the themes on those. So you need to decide the core messages that can be translated into a specific campaign format and message style. And once again, it depends on what kind of a strategic approach you have, what your organization is all about, and what you want to achieve with these messages. So they can, you know, relate to the organization as a whole in a more specific area, such as products and services, corporate social responsibility, or financial performance. So once again, this will kind of define that how are you going to identify the themed messages. Then the fifth step is to develop the message styles. And Cornelissen is actually offering a 5 potential message styles for you. Rational message, a rational message style. Then with the more symbolic orientation, you have this symbolic association message style, emotional message style. And if you have a lot more or less industry orientation approach, you can use generic message or preemptive message style. There are some differences in these message styles. It might be so that sometimes it's better use one of them. Sometimes it could be so that you need to use a combination of those. Once again, more specific definitions for each message styles is available in the book. So I'm not going to read through all of those. You can read them by yourself. But once again, in terms of the overall strategy, something to keep in mind. So you have to think about the different message styles you can actually use when planning your communication. And yeah, organizations, they often use the same message style to communicate about certain specific areas. It could be so that you have a certain groups of stakeholders that you're going to interact with certain message style. Or it could be so that you're, you know, having a different groups of stakeholders and they each have an individual style you're going to use. But once again, it depends on an organization. So there is not only one instructions on this, on how you're going to develop these styles. And of course, like I mentioned in the first half, it's important to take into consideration the traditional and new media environments. So are you going to find your key stakeholders for the most effective and efficient way in the more traditional ways of doing it? Or are you going to use these new media platforms, arenas, depending on the target audiences you have? And of course, you have to take into consideration the budget. Like I mentioned, it might be so reaching out different stakeholders by using new media arenas could be cost efficient. But once again, if you want to achieve more visibility, it could still cost a lot of money to your organization or to your company. And you also need to think, if you're going to use kind of this approach, that you're going to utilize both the traditional and new media environments, it's also a possibility when developing a media strategy. And the last step, usually, even though it is mentioned as step 7, I would myself probably start by looking at the budget. So how much money we have available for our, let's say, for our communication team. And if we're going to, you know, build a certain strategy, how achievable it is with the current budget we have. So, okay, it is said here that most of the budget will be spent on media buying. That's correct. If you're going to have any paid advertisements, if you're going to use traditional or new media outlets, how much money are you going to spend on those arenas? It will affect on the budget. And it might be so that if you run out of the budget, you have to kind of, you know, think things through in a different way, so that if there's any need for changes, you kind of have to go back, and it might be so that you can't do all the things that you have planned in the first place in your strategy, and it might be so that you have to revise it a bit, and maybe, you know, think about in a new way that are we going to use these specific media outlets? How much money we are able to spend on, let's say, advertisements and stuff like that. So it might be so that the budget creates a situation where you have to go back and think through your strategy once again. Especially when we talk about communication programs in a long run, this is quite common that you have to constantly revise it and develop it. Okay, I think that was the last slide for today, and next time we will have Chiara Valentini, our professor, as visiting lecturer, so see you in a week.